So I'll start, although I think latecomers will disturb the class. Would there be any questions from yesterday's discussion on the first two verses of the Chatur Shloka? All right, so we'll go on. We read Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text 10. Very famous verse. Tesham satatayuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam dadami buddhiyogam tam yena mam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So we shall examine some sentences, some statements from the purport. Prabhupada writes that buddhi means intelligence, and yoga means mystic activities or mystic elevation. So, who can tell me what is the real source of buddhi? From where does intelligence come from? Exactly. So, buddhi, intelligence, pure intelligence comes from Paramatma. Sri Krishna is Paramatma, in the heart of all beings, is the source of buddhi. And becoming conscious of Krishna is the goal of yoga. So when these two things are brought together, it is called buddhi yoga. To become conscious of Krishna, particularly in his form as Paramatma, who is giving us intelligence. So in the purport of Bhagavad Gita 239, Srila Prabhupada writes, this buddhi yoga is clearly explained in chapter 10, verse 10, as being direct communion with the Lord, who is sitting as Paramatma in everyone's heart. So according, there's the book Renunciation Through Wisdom, which I was reading from in my last visit here in Radhadesh in the evening. So on page 15, Srila Prabhupada explains that the essence of buddhi yoga is given in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text 39 and 40. I've made that point up here. You can note that down. The essence of what is buddhi yoga is given in these two verses from the second chapter. And that essence can be expressed in just one sentence from text 39. O son of Prita, when you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of works. Hence, action in knowledge of Krishna through direct communion with Paramatma in the heart is buddhi yoga. Prabhupada writes elsewhere in his books of taking dictation from Supersoul. Now, there are two aspects of Supersoul, which a living entity can receive instructions from in this material world. Can someone tell me these two aspects? One, we've actually already talked about just now, the most obvious. Yes. Yes. So, jive, there's a statement from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Jive shakshat nahi tata guru cheta rupa shiksha guru haite hobi mahanta swarupa. This means that the jiva in his conditioned state is not able to receive instructions from the Chaita guru, the Lord within the heart, directly, simply because he's too covered over. We see that there are plenty of persons, mystically inclined persons, or even the born-again Christians, they sometimes speak like this, that God is directing them from within the heart. And, you know, every morning they get up, they try to listen to the inner voice, which tells them what to do. And we often find that while listening to that voice, they do crazy things. It's like I read a news report. Some years ago, there were three sisters from Lansing, Michigan in the USA. So they were into this, you know, hearing the inner voice. They're Christians. So they were listening to God from within. And they got inspired one day. So they stole an ice, some kind of truck, a hot dog truck, some truck which drives to the neighborhood selling hot dogs. So they jumped into this hot dog truck and they started it up and they raced down the road. And while they were in the truck, they took off all their clothes and they took some mustard and ketchup from the truck and they smeared it all over their bodies. And when they were stopped by the police asked, "What the hell are you doing?" They said, "Oh, God inspired us." So when one is conditioned, as we were saying before, by the three modes of material nature, when the consciousness is polluted by these three modes of material nature, that effectively separates the spirit soul from directly communing with Paramatma in the heart. So therefore, Jive Shakshat, Nahi Tata, he's not able to see Guru Chetarupa, the form of the Chetra Guru within the heart. So Shiksha Guru, Haite Habi, Mahanta Sarupa. The same Guru, Prabhupada says in one purport, he writes, the real Guru is Krishna. So the same Guru to help us appears externally. Mahanta Sarupa means in the form of a great devotee, in the form of an outstanding Vaishnava who is learned in the Shastras, who is powerful. Powerful in Krishna consciousness so that he can actually dislodge the soul from his attachment to the material world and situate him on the path of Krishna consciousness. So by hearing from such Shiksha Guru, instructing spiritual master, then the spirit soul, he becomes established in his relationship with Paramatma. So first by hearing from the Guru, the external representative of Paramatma, then gradually he comes to know Paramatma within the heart and can directly receive instructions. Yes?
He was asking about two kinds of Paramatma. Is it proper to call a spiritual master Paramatma, or there should be two kinds of Guru?
I said two manifestations. So, one manifestation is within our heart. Paramatma is expanded in the heart of all living entities. And the other manifestation is the external spirit, it's called the external manifestation of Paramatma in the form of a spiritual master. So Krishna says, Acharyamam Vijnaniyam Navamanyeta Karichit in the Uddhava Gita. He said, the Acharya should be taken as myself, should never see him differently from me. And that doesn't mean that the spiritual master is Vishnu Tattva. That means he is the ambassador. Prabhupada often gave this nice example. He is the ambassador of Krishna. Just like the ambassador of a foreign country. He speaks for the government or for the president or king of that country. He is not personally the king or president, or he is not the government of that country. But when he speaks in the host country listens because he's speaking the will of the government back home. So in that way he's not different. The message is the same. This is the point. The message is the same. So going on. Hence, action and knowledge of Krishna through direct communion with Paramatma in the heart is Buddhi Yoga. Now, such action in knowledge of Krishna may be executed in three ways under Vedic injunction. The Bhagavad Gita consists of Krishna's explanations of these three ways of Buddhi Yoga. If you bring the whole message of Bhagavad Gita together and examine it, you will find that this is all Krishna is saying to Arjuna. Three ways of Buddhi Yoga, which are, quoting from Renunciation Through Wisdom, page 16. At the same time, the Gita points out how to execute Buddhi Yoga through jnana, or analytical study, and karma, or fruitive action. When Buddha Yoga is executed in conjunction with fruitive activity, it is known as Karma Yoga. Similarly, when it is executed in conjunction with analytical study, it is called Jnana Yoga. And when Buddha Yoga, or devotional service, transcends both Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga and becomes completely unalloyed, that devotion is called pure Bhakti Yoga, or loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord. So the point is made by Srila Prabhupada in this book, Renunciation Through Wisdom, that Buddha, and also he says the same thing in his purports in Bhagavad Gita, that Buddha Yoga is synonymous with Bhakti Yoga. Buddha Yoga actually means devotion to the Lord. But when Buddha Yoga takes the form, when that devotion to the Lord takes the form of following the karmakandiya regulations of the Vedas, performing sacrifices, executing regulated duties, when that is the expression of devotion to Krishna, then it is called Karma Yoga. But Buddhi is there, because in Karma Yoga one accepts the spiritual master. So the spiritual master is giving the instructions of Paramatma in terms of Karma Yoga, because the Karmakandiya section of the Vedas also comes from Krishna. And similarly, Jnana Yoga, same thing. To take up Jnana Yoga, you have to accept Guru. And he's the external representative of Paramatma. He's speaking for Paramatma in these terms of Jnana Yoga. Jnana. So the underlying principle here is bhakti. It's devotion. Because in karma and jnana, there is devotion to Guru. And there is acceptance of the Vedic instructions as being the absolute truth. Now, when this same Buddha Yoga simply focuses on devotion itself, and as Dhanadhar Maharaj would say, karma and jnana will be there, activity and knowledge will be there, but they will no longer cover the principle of devotion. Instead, they will support devotion. Just like in Krishna consciousness, in our ISKCON movement, there's certainly karma. Karma means action. So we don't see anybody sitting still the whole day, holding his breath, you see, in samadhi, in any ISKCON temple anywhere. Everyone's acting, so that's karma. But Prabhupada called it Krishna karma. It's action only for Krishna. And there is jnana, therefore we're holding these classes. Knowledge. But it is knowledge which is supportive of bhakti only. It is not knowledge. We're going to be talking shortly about two kinds of knowledge. So it is not this other kind of knowledge which ends up in either sense gratification or negation of the material world. So to continue, the ultimate goal of progress is Krishna. People do not know this. Therefore, the association of devotees and a bona fide spiritual master are important. One should know that the goal is Krishna. And when the ultimate goal is assigned, then the path is slowly but progressively traversed, and the ultimate goal is achieved. So some notes on this statement of Srila Prabhupada's purport. Now we will come to the two kinds of knowledge, because Srila Prabhupada is writing, one should know that the goal is Krishna. And when the goal is assigned, then the path is slowly but progressively traversed, and the ultimate goal is achieved. So this knowledge, what kind of knowledge is it? In Vaishnava Siddhanta Mala, which is translated as a garland of Vaishnava truths, written by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it is explained that there are two kinds of knowledge. Self-evident knowledge, Svata Siddha Jnana, and knowledge which depends on the senses, Indriya Paratantra Jnana. Indriya means the senses, Paratantra means dependent upon, Jnana means knowledge. And there's a subheading here. This Indriya Paratantra Jnana may also be known as Vishesha and Nirvishesha Jnana. So that will be explained what that means shortly. So self-evident knowledge, or Svata Siddha Jnana, is the natural truth that is inherently a feature of the pure spirit soul's original form. The Veda is present in every pure spirit soul's existence in the form of svata siddha jnana. According to the different levels of different souls in the materially conditioned state, this Veda will spontaneously manifest itself to someone, or it may remain veiled in someone else. Therefore, to help reawaken the forgetful conditioned souls to the eternally self-evident truths, the Veda has also incarnated in the form of written books which may be heard, recited, and studied. So this is also, when it says heard, recited, and studied, that means obviously under the direction of the spiritual master. That which is called svata siddha jnana is another name for bhakti. These are all quotes from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. When speaking of topics relating to the Supreme Truth, Paratattva, some call it jnana and some call it bhakti. So you see, these courses we're having in VIHE, some may say this is jnana, we're learning. But you may also say it is bhakti just as well. Because that is jnana, that jnana is the is actually svata siddha jnana, the knowledge which is part and parcel of the very existence of the spirit soul. We say that the spirit soul is composed of what? What three energies, transcendental energies of Krishna coalesce to, we can't say create, but they coalesce and they are the spirit soul. What is it? Satchit Ananda. So Sat means the energy of eternality, Chit means the energy of knowledge, and Ananda means the Ladini Shakti, the energy of transcendental bliss. So these are the three composite energies that make up the original personality. So Chit, knowledge. So this is the svata siddha jnana. So the types of jnana that are condemned in the bhakti shastras are called Indriya Paratanta Jnana, knowledge based on sense perception. And Nirvishesha Jnana, impersonal, non-distinct knowledge, the latter of which is merely the absence of the former. So this may also be expressed as in this way that I've written. Indriya Paratanta Jnana of two divisions. Vishesha, Vishesha means characteristics, material characteristics. Material knowledge. And then when you take that away, when someone becomes frustrated, and by some process of meditation or whatever, or even by just taking drugs, there's so many methods, he just has to void out the mind. So he kicks all that, all the characteristics of material nature out of his head, and what is left is Nirvishesha Jnana. There's no qualities. Knowledge of zero qualities. Shunya. Yes?
Be the scientists?
Yeah, or anyway, it means the characteristics of the material world. Scientists, they've just developed that to a very high degree. But everybody who is, whose senses and mind are tuned in to the forms and features of material existence are operating on this Vishesha Jnana.
Mm-hmm.
Pratyaksha, yeah. Well, Pratyaksha means perception. It is the process by which a conditioned soul attains this Vishesha Jnana. And then when he closes off his doors of perception and kicks out of his head everything that he's ever learned and replaces it with some void concept, then that's called Nirvishesha Jnana. But that is also the same thing, because all he's doing is negating. He's just, Prabhupada so expertly, so brilliantly makes this point. It is the same type of knowledge, just turned on its head. That's all. He hasn't actually learned anything new. See, if you learn something and then you reject it, it doesn't mean you've learned something new. And then by negating, by the process of negation, you're actually indirectly focused on the same thing. Just like if I tell you, don't think of a blue elephant. What do you think of immediately? A blue elephant. So this is negation. You see? So continuing, direct perception of Sri Krishna through self-evident knowledge is the goal of the Vedas. Progress along the Vedic path means the cleansing of Indriya Paratanta Jnana, also called Vishesha Jnana, knowledge of material distinctions, and nirvishesha jnana, from our consciousness. So, yes, progress along the Vedic path means cleansing this indriya paratantra jnana from our consciousness, so that the svatasiddha jnana may shine forth from within the heart. Thus, whether one executes karma jnana or bhakti yoga systems, Krishna must be understood as the goal. Attaining that goal, one attains pure bhakti. So, a bona fide spiritual master will fix the attention of the aspirant disciple upon that goal. That is what is meant by Prabhupada's statement. One should know that the goal is Krishna. You see, whether one is a karmi or a jnani, or one is simply a devotee. Actually, we see in our Krishna consciousness movement, you will see people with karmic tendency joining. They come, they're persons who are perhaps very skilled in some kind of activity, like a carpenter, car mechanic, or computer operator. I mean, that's their thing, you know. Their minds are very much absorbed in that. But there's some piety that impels them to want to engage this in Krishna's service. And very often they're not so philosophical, you know, but they make nice devotees who are just always on the computer or, you know, always out fixing cars or, you know, doing some work for Krishna. They're nice devotees. But you see, they're sort of strongly, they have a strong tendency to the karma. But that doesn't mean that they're karmis, and that doesn't mean that they're even karma yogis, if they accept a spiritual master who tells them the goal is Krishna. Then their karma is Krishna karma. It's bhakti yoga. Then we don't make a distinction. And similarly, and then there's the jnanis who come. They're very philosophical. You know, they read Prabhupada's books. But when they come in the temple and they see the devotees bow down, and then they might go like this. Or, you know, when the Prema Dhvani prayers are recited, they kind of go down on their knees, but they hold their head up. Because they're a little too puffed up to put their head down just yet, you know. And they don't understand deity worship, you know. And they view so much of what devotees do as being rituals. But they're very interested to hear the class, you see. And they have many, many questions. So that's the jnani tendency. But again, if they accept a spiritual master who points the goal as Krishna, they're devotees. And they can become very good preachers. And then there are those who are just devoted, you know. They come in the temple and they see the deities and they immediately think, oh, how beautiful. And they want to, you know, place some offering there on the altar, some flower. That is their tendency. So they're the devotees. So the same thing. They accept spiritual master. And the goal is pointed. The goal of their devotional sentiments are pointed to Krishna. So continuing on. This is another quote from Vaishnava Siddhanta Mala. By examining all the statements of the Vedas collectively. You want to sit down, Maharaji? Take a seat. By examining all the statements of the Vedas collectively, it is seen that they are all in agreement that other than Bhagavan, there is nothing else worth knowing. All the karma fruitive activities mentioned in the Vedas ultimately lead to Bhagavan. When jnana speculative knowledge fructifies into its pure condition, then one gives up all dualities that arise from both vishesha jnana and nirvishesha jnana. One then aims for Bhagavan. That's a very nice explanation of material knowledge. That it is either vishesha or nirvishesha. And when we speak of mental speculators, material scholars, they're scholars who are wrestling with these, you know, vishesha, nirvishesha. They're having debates, arguments, you know, they're reading books, they're refuting each other, just on the basis of these dualities. That's all that's going on in the material world in the name of knowledge. So when one finally gives up that duality and focuses his knowledge on Krishna, then it's perfect. And going on, the process of bhakti devotional service naturally cultivates a direct relationship with Bhagavan. Therefore, the Lord can be known by all the Vedas. Hand signals, hand signal time. Okay. The door opens and the hand comes. It looks very strange from here. Like a hypnotic, you know, gesture. Then someone rises from his seat, has to go up. So continuing with Prabhupada's purport. A person may have, now this is, oh yes, this is very interesting. I have a big, long selection here of various statements from Prabhupada, quotes to explain this point fully. A person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but still, if he is not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of services. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain to him. So, notes. It is Priti Purvaka, the method of love, that is the essential message. It's Ekadasi, so I'm a little spaced out. That it is the essential means to attain pure Buddhi Yoga. Priti Purvaka, the method of love. It's a quote from the purport to Bhagavad Gita 2:39, which, as I said, gives the essence of Buddhi Yoga. One who is therefore situated in devotional or transcendental loving service to the Lord, or in other words, in Krishna consciousness, attains to this stage of Buddhi Yoga by the special grace of the Lord. The Lord says, therefore, that only those who are always engaged in devotional service out of transcendental love, only to those who are always engaged in devotional service out of transcendental love does he award the pure knowledge of devotion and love. In that way, the devotee can reach him easily in the ever-blissful kingdom of God. So obviously, this type of knowledge, which is revealed by the method of love, the Priti Purvaka, is this Svata Siddha Jnana. Otherwise, it is not available. Otherwise, you can read as many books as you want, even Srimad Bhagavatam, as we talked about yesterday, Devananda Pandit was doing. But if there is no Priti, if there is no love, then there will be no Svata Siddha Jnana. There will be no realization from within the heart. It will only be this Indriya Paratanta Jnana. Knowledge which is arrived at through sense perception and mental speculation. So now we have a beautiful statement from Lord Krishna, from the Uddhava Gita. And this, these are the verses 22 to 25 from the 14th chapter of Canto 11. And interestingly enough, the last of these verses is one of the two verses I mentioned yesterday, which explains the origin of the spirit soul. And then the other verse is text 26, the next verse, which I did not include here. So here's the quote. Neither religious activities endowed with honesty and mercy, nor knowledge obtained with great penance, can completely purify one's consciousness if they are bereft of loving service to me. And now Krishna speaks very beautifully. If one's hairs do not stand on end, how can the heart melt? And if the heart does not melt, how can tears of love flow from the eyes? If one does not cry in spiritual happiness, how can one render loving devotional service to the Lord? And without such service, how can the consciousness be purified? A devotee whose speech is sometimes choked up, whose heart melts, who cries continually and sometimes laughs, who feels ashamed and cries out loudly and then dances, a devotee thus fixed in loving service to me purifies the entire universe. Now here's the one of those two verses. Just as gold, when smelted in fire, gives up its impurities and returns to its pure, brilliant state. Similarly, the spirit soul, absorbed in the fire of bhakti yoga, is purified of all contamination caused by previous fruitive activities and returns to its original position of serving me in the spiritual world. So Krishna says that reattaining that original position is only possible through this method of priti. One has to have love, knowledge, and religiosity, and even nice qualities like mercy. It's not enough. It will not purify the consciousness to the point of svata siddha jnana. So this knowledge, this buddhi that Krishna says, Tesham satata yuktanam, if one is always engaged in me, bhajatam priti purvakam, according to the method of priti, love, then dadami buddhiyogam tam, yena mam apyanti tam. Therefore, you know, here's another point. Sometimes people used to ask about Srila Prabhupada. Well, if he's a pure devotee of the Lord, and Sri Krishna, who is the origin of all knowledge, is fully manifest in his heart, then I should be able to ask him any question, like how many hairs are on my head, or, you know, any type of mundane question. And he should be able to answer it if he's actually full of knowledge. But no, Prabhupada would say, I'm not a living encyclopedia. It is not my business as spiritual master to, you know, give extensive explanation of, you know, the lifestyle of rats inside of their holes in the wall, or you know, or anything like that, any type of mundane knowledge, because that is just illusion. That is actually not considered to be knowledge at all. So real knowledge is a svata siddha jnana. That is what is conveyed by the spiritual master. Now some more nice quotes from the 11th canto, Uddhava Gita. Sri Krishna is giving examples of living entities who attained svata siddha jnana, perfect transcendental knowledge of Krishna consciousness, through the priti purvaka, the method of love. The inhabitants of Vrindavan, including the gopis, cows, unmoving creatures, such as the twin Arjuna trees, animals, living entities with stunted consciousness, such as bushes and thickets, and snakes, such as Kaliya, all achieve the perfection of life by unalloyed love for me, and thus very easily achieved me. So now I ask you just to file that away, because as we progress in looking at these essential verses of the Bhagavad Gita, we'll find that although previously Krishna has been building up the importance of knowledge, you know, that one has to have gone through so much Vedanta study and come to the conclusion of the Absolute Truth, and then it is personal, and then associate with my devotees, we now start to see how Krishna takes all this away. It begins here with these verses, that actually prerequisite knowledge, Vedic knowledge, is not actually necessary. So just keep that in mind. This is a very nice example, this verse about the living entities like bushes and trees and snakes and so on. Okay. Here's a quote from Srila Prabhupada on the same point. Prabhupada says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. Priti, with love. When you work for Krishna with love and enthusiasm, that is your Krishna conscious life. If you think that it is hackneyed, it is troublesome, but what can I do? These people ask me to do it. I have to do it. That is not Krishna consciousness. You have to do it voluntarily with great pleasure. Then you know. So this is very nice. Prabhupada is explaining all this in terms we can easily understand. It's very practical terms, which pertain to us right here and now. You see? You can start developing this priti right here and now. It's all a question of your attitude in devotional service. When a duty is expected of you, and you think, as Prabhupada here mimics, oh, this is very troublesome. Oh, the same old thing again. Why do I have to do this every day? But anyway, the temple commander is getting on my case, so all right, I have to do it. Otherwise, maybe they don't let me take prasadam today. So if that's the motivation for doing service, that's not Krishna consciousness. and one will not make progress in this Svatasiddha Jnana. But when it is done enthusiastically, of course, there are limits to enthusiasm. In the beginning days, Prabhupada used to encourage, limit to the enthusiasm means it has to be properly dovetailed. It's not that you can just... There was one Mataji in the very early days during the arti. She was ecstatic. She would do the arti, but she would dance while doing the arti. And Prabhupada said, she is in bhava. But nowadays, we don't see the pujaris dancing during the arti. So one should dance in the heart. But when offering to Krishna, one has to adopt an attitude of great reverence and respect in the offering. But that mood has to be there, you know? Mood of actually enjoying what I'm doing. That I feel like dancing. All right, I cannot dance in this situation, but in my heart, I'm dancing. Now, a doubt may be raised. In the quote from the purport now under examination, Srila Prabhupada is stating that a disciple who is not intelligent enough to advance in self-realization under the direction of his spiritual master and in the association of other devotees may yet perform devotional service with love and receive instructions directly from Supersoul within the heart. How is this statement to be understood in the light of the following quotations? Now I will expect someone here to try and give an answer. So listen carefully to these following quotations. This is a quote from Srimad Bhagavatam 4.28.41, purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead speaks directly to the individual soul when the devotee has completely purified himself by rendering devotional service to the Lord. Lord Krishna confirms this also in Bhagavad Gita 10.10. This is the same verse under discussion. Tesham satyata yuktanam, etc. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Prabhupada goes on. The Lord is the Supersoul seated in everyone's heart, and he acts as the Chaita Guru, the spiritual master within. However, he gives direct instructions only to the advanced, pure devotees. In the beginning, when a devotee is serious and sincere, the Lord gives him directions from within to approach a bona fide spiritual master. So that's what he gets from within. Go to this Guru, surrender. That's inspiration. When one is trained by the spiritual master according to the regulative principles of devotional service and is situated on the platform of spontaneous attachment for the Lord, raga bhakti, the Lord also gives instructions from within, tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. This distinct advantage is obtained by a liberated soul. Now here's another quote from 7.15.76, Bhagavatam purport. The Lord sends the spiritual master to train a devotee. And when the devotee is advanced, the Lord acts as the spiritual master within his heart. Tesham satata yuktanam. And so on. And then the translation. Krishna does not become the direct spiritual master unless one is fully trained by his representative spiritual master. So, will someone like to venture an explanation of these two points, two apparently contradictory points of view? Yes?
No, I just want to say there's a contradiction.
Well, that's what I said already. So.
What did you say?
Yes, so someone might like to offer an attempt. You recall in the purport to 10.10, Srila Prabhupada writes that even if a disciple, he has a spiritual master and he belongs to a spiritual organization, but if he's not intelligent enough to pick up the instructions of the spiritual master still from within the heart, he'll be guided and become realized in Krishna consciousness.
Said that Krishna is in the heart of everything, anything, and even fixing the faith of those who are worshipping demigods. So when even those people, by the super soul, get fixed on their belief or in their faith with demigods.
But is it so cheap? This is the point.
I mean, even those who are not advanced in spiritual life, the super soul may give them In this way.
Yeah, all right. I understand your point, but my question is it so easy as that? Because Srila Prabhupada elsewhere is saying that the disciple has to be fully trained by the spiritual master. Only then will he get this direction from within the heart. Yes?
As I understand, the only one the devotee is fully trained, then he will actually realize Krishna and he will understand Krishna. And if he's not so fully trained, he will get some guidance to come there, but he doesn't actually experience Krishna. It's not really pure devotional service what he's performing.
That's interesting. It's an interesting point, but Prabhupada writes here, if a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain to him. So that's after Prabhupada says that a person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual, but still, if he is not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. So that doesn't seem to support what you're saying. One more. Yes, Mariji?
Well, maybe I can just give an example of a boy that's here. I mean, he can't speak English, and he also has learning disabilities. But his lack of intelligence is not on the spiritual platform.
Ah, now you're coming to the point. All right, now I'm going to read the answer here. This is a very good example you've given, because we have a sort of similar example from the Shastra. There is no contradiction. The essence of following the order of the spiritual master is always love and sincerity, even if the disciple does not have the intelligence to understand the order fully. An example would be the illiterate Brahmana of Sri Rangam, who still tried to read the Bhagavad Gita daily on the order of his guru. He couldn't read. But still, because his guru said, read the Gita daily. So Prabhupada said, he sat in front of the deity and he turned the pages of the Gita. Turned the pages. And he had memorized the verses, but not very expertly. He couldn't pronounce them. So he kind of was turning the page. People were watching. They were seeing he had the page on one verse, but he's reciting some other verse. and mispronouncing all the Sanskrit. And they would laugh at him. He carried out this order with great enthusiasm and deep feelings of spiritual love. Thus he could see the form of Parthasarathi within his heart, and he got the shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Quote from Srila Prabhupada, if he's sincere, it cannot be imperfect. Because we are always imperfect, but Krishna will help us. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam. How can he be imperfect? Krishna will give him intelligence. Imperfect means whose intelligence is not perfect. But when Krishna is giving intelligence, how can he be imperfect? He may be imperfect, but he's being helped by Krishna. Therefore, he's not imperfect. And then from Srimad Bhagavatam 4:28-51 purport, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that unless one is very highly elevated in loving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot see him as he is. Nonetheless, if one sticks to the principles enunciated by the spiritual master, somehow or other, he is in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since the Lord is in his heart, he can advise a sincere disciple from within. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 10:10. The verse is quoted. In conclusion, if a disciple is very serious to execute the mission of the spiritual master, he immediately associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead by Vani or Vapu. This is the only secret of success in seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Instead of being eager to see the Lord in some bush of Vrindavan while at the same time engaging in sense gratification, if one instead sticks to the principle of following the words of the spiritual master, he will see the Supreme Lord without difficulty. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. So there's no contradiction. Because the only qualification is love. The only qualification is sincerity. So one may be able, by his past pious activities, he has a good brain, he has good attention span, and he can very quickly absorb what his spiritual master is teaching and understand it and be able to explain it to others. And someone on the other hand may have a very dull brain, and he finds it difficult to fix his mind and understand what spiritual master is saying. But nonetheless, if in both love, devotion, sincerity are there, then both are actually equal in Krishna consciousness. Yes, because both, by their love, will please Guru and Krishna. Yes, you have a question?
Will you please explain what the difference is between priti and prema? Because priti is simply is love, but prema is also love.
Yeah, well, priti in the purport here is in one purport is associated with raga. Raga means attraction to Krishna. Prema is the perfection. When one actually fully attains one's rasa with Krishna, the siddha deha, the spiritual body for serving Krishna in Goloka becomes fully manifested. The devotee enters the spiritual world, either within his heart or after leaving the body, and he participates in Krishna's pastimes. That is called prema bhakti. But priti means that there is raga, there is attraction. And that you can have now. You see, it depends on enthusiasm. So continuing, another point in this connection is, along the same seeming contradiction, another point is that even a highly advanced devotee feels himself to be a fool, and thus in loving devotion he depends upon Krishna for everything. Quote from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 19, 1-3-5, purport. An empowered devotee sees and feels himself to be the lowest of men, for he knows that whatever he does is due to the inspiration given by the Lord in the heart. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Satata Yuktanam, etc. To be empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one has to qualify himself. This means that one must engage 24 hours daily in the loving devotional service of the Lord. The material position of a devotee doesn't matter, because devotional service is not dependent upon material considerations. In his early life, Srila Rupa Goswami was a government officer and a grihastha. He was not even a brahmachari or a sannyasi. He associated with malechas and yavanas, but because he was always eager to serve, he was a qualified recipient of the Lord's mercy. A sincere devotee can therefore be empowered by the Lord regardless of his situation. So any devotee, even a very advanced devotee, like Rupa Goswami, I mean, we're all called Rupanugas. We're all followers of Rupa Goswami. He is our Acharya Dev. But he's feeling himself to be the most fallen among men. He's feeling that whatever he is all due to the mercy of the Lord. Whatever he knows, whatever he speaks, whatever he wrote about devotional service, it's all coming from the Lord in the heart. He doesn't think, I am a great learned scholar. Yes?
Say therefore, there's some Christian saints, like Francisco Assisi, they don't actually have this spiritual knowledge. They didn't have the chance to get it. As he was praying sincerely and he was developing all these good qualities and this ecstasy.
Yes. Yes. Such persons, they take birth in the Malecha Desh, and it is for the plan. It is, you know, in under the plan of the Lord, and the Lord inspires them spontaneously from within the heart. Now, that obviously means that they're not ordinary persons like everyone else who takes birth in the Malecha Desh. They have some prior qualification to receive that inspiration. Now another note. To put Bhagavad Gita 10.10 into practice, the devotee simply has to do his very best for Krishna according to his own individual capacity. Here's a quote from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya 1, Chapter 1, Text 197, purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not partial to some and neutral to others. One can actually draw the attention of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by service. Then one is further empowered by the Lord to act in such a way that everyone can appreciate his service. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.11. Yeya tamam prapadyante tam stati bhajamyaham. Krishna is responsive. If one tries to render his best service to the Lord gives him the power to do so. Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita, Tesham satata yukta. The verse is quoted again. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bestowed his special favor upon Rupa Goswami because Rupa Goswami wanted to serve the Lord to the best of his ability. Such is the reciprocation between the devotee and the Lord in the discharge of devotional duties. And then the last point, the bona fide spiritual master's instruction is that the disciple must take shelter of Krishna in the heart. If the disciple can do this much, his life will be successful. This is really all the spiritual master is teaching. The disciple must take shelter of Krishna in the heart. Prabhupada writes in Srimad Bhagavatam 8.16.20 purport, "Whenever one is perplexed, let him take shelter of the lotus feet of Vasudev Krishna, who will give the devotee intelligence to help him surpass all difficulties and return home back to Godhead." Kasyapa Muni advised his wife to seek shelter at the lotus feet of Vasudev Krishna so that all her problems would be very easily solved. Thus, Kasyapa Muni was an ideal spiritual master. He was not so foolish that he would present himself in his, as an exalted personality as good as God. He was actually a bona fide guru because he advised his wife to seek shelter at the lotus feet of Vasudev. One who trains his subordinate or disciple to worship Vasudev is the truly bona fide spiritual master. So, whether one has a, big brain or little brain or no brain at all, if he can understand this much from his spiritual master and put it into practice, any time of perplexity, doubt, difficulty, take shelter of Vasudev, the Lord in the heart, then he's actually learned everything that the spiritual master has to teach. Because the spiritual master is presenting to someone with some, big diamond-studded brain in his head, then the spiritual, as we were learning in the Tri Shloki, this is Vedanta, there's so much philosophy, so many details from the Shastra to learn the proper rituals, all of that. But what is the ultimate point of it? To remember Krishna always, that's all. That's the ultimate point. So, where are we now time-wise? Oh, our hour has come and gone. Well, we may have a few minutes left. So, yeah, if there's some questions, you can ask. Yes, we finished that. We finished 10:10. Tomorrow we begin on 10:11.
Where was that?
The contradictory sentence. Well, I quoted many that seem to contradict, but I'll just go over them. I'll go over them quickly for you. In contradictory purports, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 28, verse 41 in the purport. Srimad Bhagavatam 7:15-76 purport. Those two. 7:15-76 purport. It's Ekadasi, I get easily bewildered. I haven't eaten all day, so anyway, 4:28-41 purport. Yes.
Can you explain why Krishna directs a person to a particular spiritual master and not just anyone, but
That is explained by Lord Chaitanya, that there is an attraction of mood, that each Vaishnava spiritual master is just like in ISKCON. Of course, this is when Lord Chaitanya is explaining, he's talking about the mood of rasa. The jiva has his own constitutional rasa with Krishna. If he's in the sakya bhava, friendship, then when he hears a guru who's speaking in that mood, he becomes attracted. Well, in our ISKCON terms, we also have spiritual masters who are projecting different moods of service to Srila Prabhupada. So devotees, they have their own inner mood, and it becomes awakened or it becomes enlivened when they hear a particular spiritual master speaking. And they naturally, they want to hear more from him. And they want to, be under his shelter and have his association. That's what they feel most attracted to serve Krishna when they hear this particular devotee. It's not a slight against any other spiritual master, but just this one, they feel most inspired, most attracted to serve Krishna when they hear him because of the mood. Any other point? Yes, Haridev?
How to understand the when we are in a sentimental way, and when we are experimenting some kind of love.
Prabhupada, it is a question of sacrifice. It's a question of sacrificing everything. Because if it is sentimental, the word sentimental, senti means senses, mental means mind. So that means that the motivation is coming from senses and mind. Some attachments are there. You know, like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that lust hides within the senses, mind and intelligence. So if the motivation for serving one, for serving someone, is sentimental, that means that there is some motivation of lust. Just like I was told, excuse me for this example, but it comes to mind and it's Ekadasi, so I'm helpless not to repeat it. But I won't mention any names. But I heard the other day, someone told me, that when one former devotee who is acting in the role of spiritual master, ISKCON spiritual master, he left ISKCON with a woman. Then another lady, another Mataji, who is his disciple, when she heard this, she said, "Why with her and not with me?" And then she left. She immediately packed up her things and no one ever saw her again. So that's an example of sentimental attraction. And when the motivation is rendered, you know, when it's cut off, one can supply no more satisfaction to that subtle motivation, then all inspiration is lost, you see. So sentimental means it's seen in terms of sacrifice, because one who actually has real love for Krishna will sacrifice everything for Krishna. This is why Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that Jesus Christ, whatever Preetu is saying notwithstanding, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that Jesus Christ, Lord Jesus Christ, must be a Vaishnava. Why? Because he sacrificed everything for God. Only a Vaishnava would do this. That's not sentimental. Yeah?
So what is enthusiasm? How to recognize when we are enthusiastic and...
Well, in the beginning, they overlap, you see. In the beginning, it's understood that our enthusiasm will not be pure because our enthusiasm comes and goes. You know, sometimes we don't feel enthusiastic. So now, actually, this is a good point. From Greek philosophy, it is said, the Greek philosopher said, there are three ways to inspire someone. Pathos, logos, and ethos. These are Greek words. I'm now co-GBC in Greece, so... I'm learning these things. So pathos means emotion. Just like there are some preachers who are very emotional, not just in Krishna consciousness, but I mean in other religions. They stand up in front of the, you know, congregation, and they shout, and they sweat, and they cry, and they, you know, and they warn about hell, and they, you know, create a big frenzy, and then people get all emotional, and, you know, they get into it. But this does not last very long. The people leave the assembly, and they go home, and within, you know, a few minutes or a few hours, they're back engaged in the same old sinful activities that they're being warned against by the preacher. And then there's logos. Logos means by argument, by logic, argument, philosophy. That's better because it captures the rational mind. But still, one just by logos, and he may become simply a theoretician. You know, he's theoretically understands everything, but still he cannot fully engage himself. Still he doesn't, you know, still his enthusiasm wanes, you know, it fades away. Huh? So finally, it's ethos. This is the true inspiration. Ethos means character. Character. It is a pure devotee's character. This is the meaning of acharya. Acharya means he teaches by example. So proper inspiration means you want to follow that example. So that example, now fortunately for us in ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada has standardized the example. Now, when you're, I guess I can just speak a little more openly. If someone is thinking to choose a spiritual master, this is what he should be looking for more than anything else, character. And as I said, the character is laid down by Srila Prabhupada. So you look for a guru who is setting the example of sadhana bhakti principles. Huh? Lord Chaitanya said that a highly advanced devotee, externally, he's appearing just like a neophyte sadhaka. You know, just like new devotees, they're very eager to become fixed in Krishna consciousness. So you see them, they chant their rounds very sincerely, Hare Krishna, trying to pronounce every word very carefully because the bhakti leader has told them this is the way you must chant. So they're trying, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. You take a picture of that. Oh God. Why don't you take a picture of this? So they're very sincere in everything they do. Yeah. So they're following an example. They're following Acharya. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, the one who is Acharya, one who is a highly advanced devotee, he's setting down the example of sadhana bhakti in just that way, in just the way that new devotees can become inspired to follow.